After about a half dozen years of deliberation and public comment, the White House Council on Environmental Quality issued a final guidance last month on how federal agencies should treat greenhouse gas emissions, adding those considerations to a laundry list of others they've got to take into account whenever public land is concerned. Attorney Darren Threet, a partner at Holland & Knight, talked with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu about this new guidance. He says it's another factor anytime agencies are considering projects governed by the 1970 National Environmental Policy Act.
NEPA is a law that requires federal agencies to factor environmental considerations into their decision-making, such as the issuance of permits. So this is achieved primarily through the preparation by agencies of environmental impact statements, which are exhaustive, 2 to 3 year processes where agencies review impacts of projects in great detail. Now, the EA is a tool that agencies use to determine whether or not the preparation of an EIS is required. And that's based on a determination of the significance of environmental impacts in an EA. So if through the EA process, an agency determines that the impacts on the environment are not significant, they'll issue a document known as a finding of no significant impact, and then the agency will go ahead and move along with its decision. Whereas if they determine that the impacts are significant, the agency will enter into the EIS process.
That's a really great summary. So with greenhouse gases now being added as one of the factors that agencies are going to have to look at among the range of things that they already look at, it's probably foreseeable that the more complicated EIS process that you just outlined is going to kick in more and more cases. Is that a fair expectation?
Well, it's actually difficult to know at this stage because agencies have the discretion to determine the level of review for projects based on the size and scale of a project. So for smaller projects, it's possible that agencies may be able to review these climate change impacts and determine that it still doesn't push a project into the significance category.
Right. And that phrase significant impact, I know, is pretty important in NEPA proceedings. I think some earlier draft versions of this guidance had defined significant impact a little bit more narrowly than what agencies are ultimately going to have to do here. So can you talk a little bit about, the sort of freer hand that agencies have now to determine what's significant and what's not?
Sure. So I think one of the biggest changes from the final version from prior drafts was the removal of a numerical threshold under which the quantitative analysis, which is a big part of this guidance document, would not be required. So in draft versions, if a project produced less than 25,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent emissions per year, this quantitative emissions analysis was not required. So in removing this threshold, the guidance will potentially apply to a larger number of projects.
And agencies basically on a project-by-project basis can decide whether this amount of greenhouse gas emissions that we would expect to be generated is significant or not. Is that about right?
That's correct.
So the guidance, as I read your excellent summary of it, tells agencies, I think, that they both need to consider the greenhouse gases that might contribute to climate change as a result of the project going forward, as well as how climate change might impact the project itself down the road. Is that right?
That's correct. So the guidance, as you said, has two main requirements. First, it directs agencies to quantify and analyze a project's greenhouse gas emissions to determine its impacts on climate change. Second, it requires agencies to consider the effects of the changing climate itself and how that will affect projects over time.
And one interesting aspect here is that, you bring up the example of, let's say, a coal mining permit or a mineral extraction permit. Agencies, according to the guidance, are supposed to look at not just the greenhouse gases that would be directly generated by the project itself, but, operate under the expectation that that coal that's coming out of the ground is going to get burned at some point in the future. Is that somewhat unusual in a standard NEPA review that you would look that far downstream?
NEPA reviews have, there've always been some discussion about including what's called a so-called life cycle analysis, and environmental groups have definitely been pushing for that analysis over the years. But the challenge for agencies, and I think this is going to be a difficult issue for them to cope with, is how do you then define the scope of the project? So looking at that coal mining example, an agency wouldn't normally look at the emissions from when the coal is actually used, such as, burning it in a power plant to produce power. So the question there is how far does the analysis go? And agencies have resisted this analysis in the past But the guidance makes it clear that they should now include it in the NEPA reviews.
But again, agencies are probably going to have some discretion here. And I would guess that at least in the early days of actually applying this guidance to the NEPA reviews, a lot of this is probably going to have to get tested in court at some point, right?
Well, you know, NEPA has always been a magnet for litigation.
Right.
And I definitely expect that environmental groups or others challenging projects are going to cite to the guidance as evidence that agencies aren't meeting their obligations under NEPA.
I know you said earlier that it's really too early to say how many new EISs this is going to trigger versus environmental assessments, but do we have any kind of expectations on how much extra burden this is going to add to the NEPA process, either in terms of time or in terms of cost? And if so, who does that burden fall on primarily, agencies or, you know, people seeking a permit for a particular action?
Well, I think that there's definitely going to be a learning curve. And I think that, you know, individual agencies are going to initially struggle with implementation of the guidance. I think that will lead to some delay as they kind of grapple with these new issues. I mean, this is a new impact area that needs to be considered, and it's a complicated impact area that needs to be considered under the NEPA review. As far as bearing costs, I think it's going to be borne both by the agencies and by project proponents. The project proponents needing to provide, you know, additional information that the agencies need to review as part of these NEPA reviews.
As you point out in your article, the process leading up to the final issuance of this guidance has gone on for the majority of the Obama administration. Why has this been such a complicated issue to wrestle through, and what were some of the issues that they were tackling and revising throughout the draft process?
Well, I think one of the big issues was, again, this life cycle analysis. That's been a very controversial issue over the years, and that's been something that, again, has been discussed a lot, but, you know, actually adopting it and implementing it is a very complicated and difficult issue. It's a very controversial topic.
So we hit the wave tops of this issue a little bit earlier in our conversation, but one of the things that agencies are going to need to do is estimate the future impacts of climate change on projects that they're approving today. How's that whole process going to play out?
Well, to determine how the changing climate may affect a project over time, the guidance directs agencies to use existing climate change reports, which predict future climate change scenarios, to evaluate how a project may stand up to or otherwise be affected by climate change. So agencies can use these predictions to determine if a project is vulnerable to climate change, and what, if any, measures are needed to help ensure that a project is resilient and still worthwhile.
And in the NEPA process, if they come back and determine that the answer is yes, this is vulnerable, what are the steps that they can take? I mean, does that mean the project doesn't go forward, or they need to come up with alternatives to mitigate those effects?
So they could use mitigation measures to account for vulnerabilities in projects, such as changes to the project design. They could also use alternatives such as locating the project in a slightly different area or other methods.
Darren Threet is a partner at the law firm Holland & Knight. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click share with friends.